Welcome to Hope Central's latest podcast. If you would like to know more about service times, locations, or to subscribe to our podcast, head over to our website for any further information, hopecentral.org.au. We hope you enjoy today's message.
As Kev said, I am a Brit, and please forgive me for that, although most of you probably in here are somehow linked to us anyway, knowing the history of Adelaide and its past. So that's nice, and I do really appreciate the opportunity to come and share with you this morning. I want to actually start by being a little bit serious, if I may, and I've got an apology to start with. And isn't it interesting that when you're about to stand on stage and preach on grace, you get challenged that very morning on your own grace? And so I'm just going to apologize. I can't see her, but Lady came to this morning and I corrected her on her pronunciation of cap. And she said, oh, you'll be able to use that upstairs and up there. And I think not for the reason. Actually, I stand here suddenly realizing that my grace wasn't where it should have been this morning. And so apologies to that person this morning. But God uses all those moments to remind us of his grace and his love for us. And so this morning, I want to start again by just thanking Joe and Jody for the opportunity to speak. And it's not just sentiment. What you guys carry here, that vision for this church, for Elizabeth and beyond, is huge. And your obedience to God's call to lead this church and lead these great people is awesome. And so thank you for that, and for your heart also to partner with CAP. And it's no small thing what the Debt Center has been doing here over the last 8 years. Since it started back in 2010, I was hoping, really hoping, I've been watching some of the numbers, and I was hoping for 3 more bookings into the Debt Center because I could announce a pretty big milestone. But we are just 3 short. But we are just, as of the end of this week, the center here has had 297 families book into that Debt Center. 297 families. And as I go on to share just my heart and why I got involved in this thing, you will understand the significance of every single one of those families. That began with client 202969. Sorry, I can't share the name. it's unfortunate that I have to turn it into a number. But that began with that client back in April 2010. And I don't know if Kev remembers, and I'm hoping that the stats are right on this, but I had a look into that case. And unfortunately, I think Kev turned up to the door and they weren't there. client two, he turned up, he did the first visit, and about 2 months later, the client closed. That doesn't sound particularly encouraging. But what I want to say is the work has continued to grow and has continued to develop. Kevin didn't stop because those first 2 clients didn't move forward. And today we can celebrate that 54 families have now completely gone debt-free through the work here at Hope Central. And another 24 actually finished with CAP on a positive note, saying they could finish the final hurdle themselves. That's nearly 80 families who've gone completely debt-free through the work here, which is just an amazing work. And my, a huge commendation to you, Kev, for the work that you have put in and the support team around you. So I'll just give you a clap this morning. But most exciting, and as Kev highlighted this morning, we do this ministry not just to serve the poor, but we want to see people's lives transformed by the gospel of Jesus Christ. And this year, I don't know if ever you have been told, but CAP has an old-fashioned ring handle fire bell in our head office, you know, the sort of one that you turn really fast and it spins, and it makes a rather loud noise. These are installed in CAP offices throughout the world. There are 4 in the UK head office because it's so large. There's 1 in New Zealand, there's 1 in Canada, and we have 1 right here in Australia. And every time somebody, one of our center managers or our job club managers, phones us to say that somebody gave their lives to Christ, we get to ring that bell. And somebody goes up and we ring that bell and we gather and we stop. Now, this has become such an issue in the UK that they had to put in a bell ringing policy. Okay, that's genuine. It gets rung at a particular time each day because it gets rung 5 or 6 times a day across in the UK. We don't have the privilege yet of doing that, but one day we will. One day we will have a bell ringing policy in Australia because it's so disruptive to our work. And that isn't that a great thing to stop work for? It's an awesome thing to stop work for. But the news is here. We have rung that bell over 56 times right here for this centre and the work that you guys are doing. So thank you so much for what you do. As Kev has said and I highlighted, I've been with CAP 8 years. My wife, Rosie, has actually been a little bit longer. She has just hit 10 years with the charity and now is the CEO here in Australia, which means we're a little bit more committed than we were previously. We originally planned 3 years. That time has come and gone. We got permanent residency in February, and so we look like we're going to be here a little bit longer, which is great, and it is exciting, but also, yeah, a little bit daunting. The pull of grandparents is definitely there, and so, it's not been the easiest challenge that we had. I'm also a Yorkshireman. Please don't hold that against me. I was unfortunately welcomed by Glyn at the door. I say unfortunately because he's from the wrong side of the hill. He's from Lancashire. There's a big... I'm just speaking the truth. There's a bit of a battle, but there are two good things that did come out of Lancashire. Glyn is one of them, and there we go. I turned it round. There we go. The second is a comedian called Peter Kay, a British comedian, and he has this great sketch on the great tradition of biscuit tea dunking that the Brits have when it comes to cups of tea. Now, this hasn't particularly translated here to Australia particularly much, but it's a great sketch on his understanding of which biscuit is the best one for dunking in your cup of tea. Now, if we go with a children's milk biscuit, the reality of it is they just touch the water and they're like, I'm out, get me out of here, don't want to be in there, and shirks, it's not going in there very long. But there's a biscuit in the UK that's called a hobnob. No, okay, genuine, there's a few nods that people know. There's nothing that I can really compare it to yet. I've not really found anything. I guess an Anzac biscuit is somewhere, but it's not quite the same. But anyway, this biscuit is like the SAS of biscuits when it comes to tea dunking. It's like, dip me! Dip me again! Dip me again! It keeps going. It keeps going. And somebody referred to me the other day and my wife, and they said to us, Dave, you are the hobnob of CAP. You just keep going and going and going. And they just say, Dave, why is it that you keep going? Why are you willing to just be dunked over and over again when things seem so hard, when the grandparents' pull gets too difficult, when we struggle because we haven't had the money in that we hoped as a charity, when my wife accepts the CEO position, and the reality for our lives is that it's transformed and made our time and the family dynamics completely different. Why do we keep going? And so this morning I want to share with you a couple of things. I want to really dig into this reason of why I believe we should be serving the poor. I want to look at Jesus, his own heart for the poor. But then I also want to reflect on your sermon series of what's love got to do with it. And then I'm going to ask a response from you. And so I'm going to begin. I've been reading on this topic, particularly loving the words from Timothy Keller, a great Christian author and theologian from the States. And he's written a fairly thought-provoking book on the topic of serving the poor called Generous Justice. Please go and get hold of it and read it yourselves. But in that book, he says this, serving the poor, doing justice, is a sign that you have been justified by faith. It's not the basis. You're not justified because you're serving the poor, but a heart poured out for the poor is the inevitable sign that you have been saved by grace. When I first read those words, I had to challenge myself a little bit. I needed to understand, well, what is this verse particularly saying about being justified by grace? Tim Keller goes on to explain that our justification comes from the gift of receiving God's forgiveness. But it's more than that. It's more than just recognizing that Jesus forgave our sins. It's understanding that Jesus' righteousness is pinned on you like a medal. Tim Keller portrays this beautiful picture. When Christ died on the cross, he defeated sin. Many of you in here who have been Christians for a while will not deny that. You'll understand that. You'll have been taught on that over and over again. Yet when he died on that sin and he won, when he had victory over sin, the medal that he should have received, he turned round and he said, "That is yours." He pinned that medal on your chest and said, "The righteousness that I have is now yours." That is being saved by grace, being justified by grace. Serving the poor, doing justice, is a sign that you have been justified by faith. It's not the basis. You're not justified because you're serving the poor. You are justified. You're not justified because you are serving the poor, but a heart poured out for the poor is an inevitable sign that you have been saved by grace. What many people don't realize, this is a huge topic throughout the Bible. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Amos all talk about serving the poor. If you are not intensely concerned with the quartet of the vulnerable, our hearts are not right with God. And who are the quartet? The widow, the orphan, the immigrant, and the poor. If you've got your Bibles with you and you want to turn them on or open them up, it's getting old, that joke now, isn't it? I think we're all past that one. I appreciate it. Joe went with toilet humor this morning. I can bring one of my jokes in later, which is great. But if you want to turn to Isaiah 58 for me, and we're going to just have a look briefly at the verses 6 to 7. And it says this: "Is this not the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice, untie the cords of the yoke of oppression, and to set the oppressed free, break every yoke. Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and to not turn away from your own flesh and blood." Isaiah doesn't hold back. In Israel, the act of fasting was a way you humbled yourself before God. You were saying to God, "I am a sinner and I need your mercy." And when I read that passage in Isaiah, it's like he's saying to me, "Dave, when I see you fasting in church or at home, but you're not feeding the hungry, or you're not sheltering the homeless, then there's a disconnect between you and God." And if we are truly saved by grace and we humble ourselves before God, our actions should be to serve the poor, to feed the hungry, to provide shelter for the wanderer, and to see the naked and clothe them. What Isaiah is saying is if our hearts are right with God, we'll care about the poor. But the reality here in Australia, that is difficult to see. I commend so many churches for the works they're doing overseas, and I love the fact that I can stand up here after that great presentation this morning of the work you're doing in PNG. I love the heart the church has here in Australia for particularly PNG and those Southern Asian islands. It is amazing. The poverty there is fairly obvious. It's smacking your face when you land on that flight. It's pretty obvious that those who are starving, it's pretty obvious those who are naked, it's pretty obvious those who need shelter. But the reality here in Australia is that poverty is hidden. It's difficult to see. It took me 3 years, can I be honest, to really see if CAP had a place here in Australia when I arrived. Me and my wife questioned, is CAP really needed here? 2.9 million Australians are living below the poverty line. That's 1 in 8 people right now here in Australia are struggling. The ABC reported this week that more people are now making choices as whether to pay a bill or to feed their family. That's what living below the poverty line means. It means that you're making decisions between essential items within your budget. It could be a family that look like they have it all together. sat right next to you this morning. But secretly, their shopping trips are filled with anxiety. Are they going to have to put things back on the shelf? Are they going to have enough money to pay the bill? Shame and guilt grips them. It could be the woman who's currently couch surfing from family member to family member. She's been out of work for 12 months, and saving enough money for permanent rental just seems impossible. It could be the elderly neighbor who sits alone, unable to pay their energy bills. When I think of those people sitting in darkness, with no one to turn to, when we try to find answers in government alone, when our feelings of helplessness overwhelm us, when we become cynical about the poor, there is a man I know that cares more than I do. A man who cares about the people who hide in shame. The poor, the widow, the orphan, and the stranger. Jesus. Jesus changed everything. He traveled around. He challenged the status quo. He flipped society upside down. He came into a broken world and believed the poor were getting what they deserved. And while people told the blind and lame to leave him alone, Jesus sought them out. He stopped. He listened. And then he healed their sickness and forgave their sins. And while many believed that the marginalized were not their problem, Jesus said that being a neighbor meant stopping for just one, providing clothing, shelter, food, and friendship. While others saw brokenness that was too hard to fix, Jesus saw people through the eyes of compassion. And I tell you what, his compassion has no limits. Jesus came with a real specific mandate. And in Luke chapter 4, he says to bring good news to the poor, to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, and to set captives free. He said, the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. He said that to the one person, it was worth leaving the 99 to go after. He embodied the audacious truth that every single person is made in the image of God and that no one is too far from his grace. Freedom in this life and hope for the next. When the religious leaders were looking for a king to reign on earth, Jesus took all the brokenness, all the poverty, and all the world's misery on himself. And he was nailed to a cross. Through his life, through his death, and through his resurrection, Jesus changed everything. Ready to pin that medal on each of us. Ready to say, this righteousness that I have is now yours. And in his life, Jesus gave us a model to follow. It wasn't anything new. It was the same mandate that he gave to Israel. He called his church and his people to live as he did, to reach into brokenness and offer a helping hand, to go after the one, to show compassion that had no limits, and to share the good news. The good news that Jesus came to give life and life in all its fullness. The exciting thing is that you as a church have already partnered with CAP to provide solutions into this. Your debt center is doing an amazing amount of work, and I will call you later to continue to support Kev in that work as that grows and continues to flourish. We're also about to launch another debt center right in the heart of Port Adelaide. And so to increase the services across this city is just going to continue to develop the support for those who need it. We are passionate about four things as a charity: serving the poor, seeing the lost saved, doing it with the church, and doing it across Australia. We do that through our debt help. But really excitingly, we have launched two brand new services that we are going to partner with you here as a church to run over the next few months. You will officially be the first church to run every CAP service that we have to offer, which is great. That is awesome. Our second service is our CAP Job Clubs. And I want to invite Erica to stand up, if I may. Some of you will know Erica, some of you will not. She's generally down at your Salisbury campus. And so Erica has stepped up to say she's going to lead this ministry right here in Elizabeth and beyond. So thank you, Erica, for doing that. But what are these job clubs? What is this about? CAP has really identified that the majority of people struggling in debt and the reason they can't get out of that place of poverty is the fact that they are unemployed. And although there are some awesome services out there that support and provide education to people, often people come out of those feeling like they were just pushed through a system, that their boxes were ticked and their government funding was received, but the person at the end of it has still no worth. They still have no job, and they still find themselves isolated, alone, and suicidal. Our job clubs are about empowering and loving people. We have a course which will provide some great skills and opportunities, but it's no different to what anyone else is offering. But the true difference with a CAP job club is that we're going to provide a community, a place that people can come to that know is there week in, week out, where they can come and they can be loved and cared for. I had the privilege of launching the very first CAP job club here in Australia. It was right in my hometown of Newcastle, where I started with 9 individuals. But the very first job club member was a lady called Angela. Angela, I met through the local op shop, and I was introduced to her. She was out of work, and I invited her along. When she came through the door to the club and she sat down and joined us for morning tea, she wore black. She had the most sour, glum face on that I have probably ever seen on any individual. Her hair was black. And she sat, she didn't speak, and she just was there. She was also incredibly overweight, and I don't say that in particular to have any prejudice around that, but it was... that didn't help with who she was and her self-esteem. She was brought up believing that she was the wrong shape. She was brought up believing that she didn't have the skills that she needed. She was brought up to believe that she had no worth. That first day, we got to tell her some truths that we knew about her. I knew she'd been working in the local job club and I was able to in the local op shop, and I was able to tell her what amazing work she was doing and how much the staff there really appreciated that. A small smile cracked on her face. Week 2, she came back, and others in the group had recognized that she was always the first to go and offer a cup of tea to somebody else. She was always the first to hand round the biscuits. She never took one first for herself, but she always offered to somebody else first. She was commended and thanked by members of the group, all in the same position, but all recognizing the gifts that each other had and the skills that each other had. We started taking them through a course, and that second week, we had the privilege of being able to work on their CVs, and we rewrote a few things. I remember Angela saying specifically to me, "There's nothing I can put on mine. I've done nothing worthwhile in my life." So we put together a CV, and it was scant. There wasn't a whole lot on it, but it told of who she was. It told of her generosity. It told of her ability to serve and help. Week 4 came about, and burst through the job club door was Angela, with a grin across her face. Her hair, she'd dyed, she had the most hideous purple leggings on. That was not to the point, but they weren't black. She came in with a big smile on her face, and I said, "What have you done with Angela?" And she said, "Dave, I felt so inspired last week that I decided to take my CV around, and I got a part-time job in the local footy stadium." 4 weeks. People don't need to be told what to do. They just need encouraging about who they are. I've been massively inspired by the fact that she just needed to be told that her worth wasn't based on the job that she did, but on the fact that Jesus Christ loved her. I got to pray with her, and she came to our Mother's Day service at church, and I've got to say, we've not seen much of her since, but I believe a seed has been sown in her life. That is what a job club is about. We also, in the next months, will be starting a release group right here in this church, and so this time, can I ask Lynn to stand? This is Lynn. Lynn is also generally down at your Salisbury campus. Lynn is going to be starting and doing the release group. I have no amazing, empowering stories about our release groups, but I can tell you this. A release group is about helping people break from the addictions of life that rob them from who Christ calls them to really be. It's about taking people who are struggling with gambling, who are struggling with alcohol, drug, shopping addictions, eating addictions, for those struggling with anger and forgiveness, and taking those groups of people and putting them into a same community of people like that job club and having them encourage and build each other up to reestablish their worth in who they are. But we also know that the only way to true freedom is understanding that Jesus Christ is our true, is the only one who can give us that freedom. And so as a group, it is based on the 12 steps of AA or NA, but we don't talk about a higher power. We talk about Jesus Christ. And so over the next few months, that group will begin, and we want to inspire you and encourage you to send people and to put people towards those and into those services. But I just wanted to inspire you about what maybe you could do for any of these services, whether it's the debt center, the job club, or the release group. My own story of CAP began actually 12 years ago when our church of about 30 people launched the very first CAP debt center in the city of Bradford. Bradford is not one of those places you generally go to. It's one of those places that you avoid as much as you can. But my heart and my journey began because I saw that my church was very white and very middle class. And I looked out and I looked at our community and I realized that the poor existed out there and they did not exist in here. And so I set about finding out the biggest needs, and that debt came up. And we launched our debt center. But the reality and what I want to tell you is that there was cynicism in my heart. I began that journey actually believing some lies about people in debt. I remember talking and saying, well, everyone who seems to be in debt always seems to have the 52-inch widescreen TV or the brand new sofa on rental. They just are spending their money wrongly. God gave me an interesting wake-up call. The very first client I had the privilege of meeting was a young couple called Donna and Ed. I went as the support worker. So Kate, our debt center manager, had been and she'd done the initial visit, she'd collected the data, and they were working through CAP and going well. I got involved because I received a phone call from CAP to say although they were making and catching up on payments, that they were going to be out of their arrears on their rent shortly, the landlord wanted them out and out quickly. Well, as a leader in that church, I said, well, this is why you partner with us. We are a church and we want to support and help those in those situations. And so I very quickly made a few phone calls around church. One of them, we managed to get a van to hire, and we decided we'd go down, we'd distribute their furniture around the city. And so we collected that van and me and my wife set off and we parked up outside their house. Right outside on the road was this beautiful blue Subaru Impreza WRX. It had the body kit based on Colin McRae's World Rally Championship winning car of whatever year it was. It was polished to a spotless shine. It had its hubcaps span weirdly. I'm not a car person, you'll start to understand now. But anyway, I could appreciate that this was a car that somebody put a lot of time and money into. I turned to my wife and I said, typical, that's where the money's gone. As I walked into that home, having been brought up in a Christian family and always been in and around church, I'd never really had the opportunity to truly stand in front of a non-Christian knowing that I had something for them. I thought, wow, this is my best opportunity to connect and really show them who Jesus Christ is. So I walked through that door, and as somebody who loves to connect with new people, I wanted to find my connection. It's going to be the car. I walked through that door, I shook Ed's hand, and I said, Ed, great car. And his response was, that's not mine, that's the neighbor's. I've never quite been humbled so quickly in my life. I remember at that moment just getting a very quick glimpse of God's grace on my own life. I gave my life to Christ at about 12 years old, having been bullied through school quite heavily for my faith on most of the occasions, and also the fact that I have ginger curly hair. But I remember coming home after school, sitting on the edge of my bed in tears, and having been brought up with an amazing mother and father who taught me about God's grace and his death on the cross. He said, I just cried out and said, Jesus, will you be my best friend? And guess what? He turned around to me that day and he didn't ask me about any Subaru Imprezas. He didn't ask me about the sins of my life that had gone by. He just said, Dave, I already died for you on the cross. I already have died for you on the cross. Ed did not need me turning up at that door that day and reminding him of the failures in his life. He needed a Christian to turn up and say that Jesus Christ loves you. What's love got to do with it? And I think I need to say much more. Love is grace. His grace to give everything up for each of us means that I can stand here today having served people like Donna and Ed, being willing to go again and again and again because he never gives up on me. Every day I fall short of God, of everything he calls me to be. But he never gives up on me. Every day he says, Dave, start again. Start again. That is what CAP is about. That is why we are passionate about what we are doing. And so today, I want you to get involved in this thing. Guys, can I just say thank you so much for what you already do, for the work in PNG. And I know that's just a small amount of what you guys do as a church, for the work you do through the Debt Center and the CAP Money Course. Please keep going. But I want to thank you so much for the impact that you guys are having in this city for the kingdom. It is inspiring and it is awesome. And I'll hand back over to Joe. So thank you for your time.
Thanks for listening to this week's message from Hope Central. We hope you'll stay connected with us. Visit our website, hopecentral.org.au, and follow us on Facebook, Hope Central SA.